Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of
what's
the
up, what's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, when there's things going on in the farming community in the world, we got to bring in our expert. The goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, you know, just living the dream, watching the corn market try to trade to highs we haven't seen since mid last summer, and the wheat market's up like we've been expecting it to do, and I have much happier farmers, so I am enjoying life a lot more right now at this point than I was maybe last summer or last September when the market was trying to bottom out. So what? Much nicer in the industry.
It is nicer, but don't you think, I mean, you tell me I'm a trader, you're actually in it, but don't you think that a lot of these guys and gals and people in the business make a mistake when they start to try to guess and bet on the weather? Don't you think that's an error in judgment?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, we already are seeing discussions about it right now because we have a warm, we're having an above normal February. There's talk of field work getting started in Illinois already. All of these things out there, and now I'm starting to hear rumblings of, this is reminding me of 2012. Every spring since 2012 or 2013, basically, I've had to hear how it's reminiscent of the 2012 drought. And so I think that at this point, everyone's waiting to see that happen again. And it's only 5 years later. I just don't know. I wouldn't bet the farm on 2012 like drought again, and so what that does is every weather person and their brother out there is working to try to be the one person that forecasts the weather spot on. And we had that 650 corn group last year that, tried to tell us that La Nina was going to come in and be aggressive and kick everyone's butt, and we were going to have 650 corn. Well, we all know how that worked out. But unfortunately, the whole idea of there being that possibility of the 650 corn really left a lot of guys sitting unhedged as we rolled into harvest, because the market rallied big for about 3 weeks and then collapsed completely, leaving a lot of people hanging. So that really stunk, and I think we're always going to kind of fall into that pitfall because everyone wants to be the guy that sells all of their grain at the highest level.
But don't you think, I mean, I also find one of the problems with this, trying to bet the weather is that not only do they borrow all the money to get the crop in the ground and do all the work and all this stuff, they're naturally bullish. They own the crop, so that's a problem. And then they don't hedge, and instead of hedging, they go out and buy more futures to get even longer the corn that they already own. So they don't have what they own hedged, and now they're speculating on more. And of course, that typically never ends well. And I think that creates even a bigger problem, don't you?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, we're starting to see it now. We just had a farmer up in North Dakota that filed bankruptcy here, Chapter 7, and his list of creditors is a mile long. He was farming, I think at the high point, it said he was farming in 2012, he was farming up to 59,000 acres. 59,000 acres in North Dakota. And that was exactly what was going on. He was basically borrowing and thinking that at some point in time he was going to hit that epic home run, and unfortunately the it looks like the free credit ran out before the market rewarded him, and that's an outlier. We do see it quite often. We've got a guy in Michigan that is concerns of quite a few people as he keeps getting bigger and bigger, and everyone keeps wondering how he's putting, making ends meet, things like that. So it is something that is concerning. And then you have your regular everyday, you know, customer of mine or farmer of mine that is out and is working to try to make ends meet, or is, you know, in some circumstances I see guys when I go to speak at meetings or something like that, where they're sitting on beans in the bin. Beans right now are worth $10. But instead of bringing beans to the market because they think the basis is too poor or something of that nature, they're going out and getting a commodity credit loan on their corn or something like that. And so it's sometimes you see it happen quite often where it's a little concerning with their, you know, taking a credit extension when they don't necessarily need to. And it could lead to a situation to where when they actually do need to, it may not be there for them.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think that's, to me, that's, you know, one of the issues. I think that, you know, the farmers are farmers, and they should focus on mm-hmm. what they do to make a living. And, you know, and if they're going to speculate, they should speculate through what they own, where they can still lock in a higher basis and have some fun, but should not get into outside speculating, because, again, they're not farming. They're watching the market. And they're trying to time the market. And you and I both know that timing the market, any market, is a relative impossibility. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I've seen it over and over and over again, especially these last few years. You know, you had your lucky few. And we've seen it, and I talked about it last night. I had a group of guys I spoke to in Minnesota, actually, and we talked about it. And I said, you know, how many of you sold too soon in 2006 going into 2007? You know, and all of them raised their hand, because that was the first time we saw the market actually spike and trade well above the December 275 price that had been hitting the high of for the 20 years prior. You know, that was the very first year. And I can remember an elevator group in the state of Michigan had come out and pushed guys. It was 2006 or 2007, and they had guys contracted with $3 corn through 2009. Well, 2007, I think it was the first year we saw $5 corn since 96. So, you know, who contracted too early then? They raised their hand. 2010, it happened again, because 2009, the price fell off into 2010, and a lot of guys contracted too soon. And again, who did it in 2010? They all raised their hand. You know, about 2012, they all raised their hand. And I said, how many of you think that that's your biggest concern when it comes to marketing your crop? All raised their hand. I said, what reality comes down to is there's three examples of where you contracted too soon and saw the market move higher. And I can probably give you 25 other examples in years prior to where contracting ahead would have made you money. Do you guys agree? They all nod their head. But I can guarantee you that they still, their number one concern is that they're going to market their crop too soon. And so many times what we see is that in fact, they wait or they do market some, but then as the market continues to rally and certain analysts out there get all bullish and start talking on Saturday morning TV about how the market needs to trade to $6 again or something of that nature, everyone starts to sit on their hands. And then when the board drops off and we hit like this past September, August timeframe, when the September board hit $3.02, then they're panicking, trying to figure out how to manage their cash flow needs and this, that, and the other thing. So it is something that I see a lot of times. And farmers, of course, are eternal optimists, or they wouldn't be farmers. So I get that part. But I think farmers have an ability through the market to lock in their baseline or low level price. And then if they want to have an option strategy of some sort or something of that nature to get themselves, you know, upside protection covered, they can do that. But unfortunately, sometimes I just see it to where I feel like we roll the dice a little too much and it can be costly.
Those farmers love to gamble. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the Goddess of Grains, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day. We're getting close to 300,000 downloads. I need to get there. Got to help me get there and hit the button. Anyways, also there's my new podcast, which is Bubba's Bottom Line. You can find that at bubbatrading.com. We're going to step out here for a break, and we'll be right back after the break with more from Angie Setzer, the Goddess of Grains, the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's the time. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself. She is making an appearance right here at the Bubba Show. Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, a vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, last week or 2 weeks ago, we had the USDA report. And, of course, we've had a pretty substantial rally since then. Was there anything in that report that led you to believe that there was going to rally? I mean, you and I said they were going to rally long before that anyway, so I'm curious as to how you interpreted the report.
The report itself, I mean, the one thing that we saw was global stocks came in lower than anticipated for corn. Domestic stocks came in a bit lower than anticipated for corn as well. So I think, you know, my interpretation, of course, is carryout values are probably still a touch too high, I think. You know, I'm expecting the USDA to actually drop us down into 2.1, 2.2 carryout, 2.1 billion, 2.2 carryout, just with the demand that we're seeing. The ethanol demand's been extraordinarily strong. You know, it has weakened up a little bit here recently with some poorer margins, but I still think that most folks are going to see that the ebb and flow of the renewable fuels and what they're able to make margin wise will kind of continue to reinforce that ethanol production. Livestock numbers keep getting bigger, you know. So to me, I think what we're seeing on the corn side of things is I think we'll see perhaps similar to what we've seen in soybeans, where it's a very slow kind of air out of the balloon when it comes to this large carryout number. And that's what we saw last year in soybeans. Carryout started at, 460 million bushel and ended up about half that. I'm not saying it's going to be that drastic in corn by any means, but I think we're seeing a trend to where we'll probably see corn carryout at the very least not get any larger. And that was a concern that we saw going into this marketing season. Everyone was talking about 2.6, 2.8 billion bushel worth of corn carryout, and I think that concern's gone. So to me, the main thing that we saw in this report for both wheat and corn is that the most bearish information that we have out there has been factored in. At this point in time, there's really not any sort of bearish surprise that we could see in wheat and corn, you know, really until we get a look at what's going on in the Brazil crop, the second corn crop there. But the USDA is already coming out with some really high level estimates out of Brazil anyway. So it would have to be one hellacious, surprising, you know, hellaciously large or something of that nature to surprise us on that side. So I think corn and wheat both, all of the bearish fundamentals have been factored in. Soybeans just seem impervious to negative information. I mean, the soybean carryout's still 420 million bushel. Yeah, demand's record large, but carryout's about four times what you would need to think that it's at the bottom of the barrel there. Brazil and Argentina look to be producing decent crops. So on the soybean side, I didn't see anything that would excite me in the USDA report, but on the corn and wheat side, you know, I think we finally have got the bearishness behind us. There's no more bearish surprise was all I got out of it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, there are certain people that were calling for a disaster in soybeans, and of course, we're now far from that disaster, and it doesn't mean that it can't come back in. But, you know, I think one of the big things that, you know, is that the dollar, I felt all along that the dollar had been priced in, and even the commodities were already pricing in a much stronger dollar. And I think the dollar, in my opinion, the dollar has peaked and the dollar is coming down. And I think that's making it more bullish. And I think that, you know, I've said this for years on air is that, hey, you've already seen all of the bad news. They can't put much more bad news in the market, so you should start to see markets move up, which I think we're seeing now. Does that continue? What's your take on these markets going forward and into the year? We won't use the weather because I'm a guy that likes to watch the money, not the weather. I could care less about the weather. So you tell me.
Oh yeah, this year, and I've been meaning to look at a chart. And actually, while we're talking, I'm going to go ahead and pull it up. So I'm going to do a little bit of double duty here. This year feels like it's setting up like what I want to say 2010. And that's what I wanted to check out was what the 2010 corn chart looked like, because it seemed like 2010 was the year that we came in and everyone had told us why the market needed to collapse. Basically. And all of a sudden, this inflationary new adjustment or this inflationary pressure came in. Just a second. I got a kid that thinks he has to he's going to make as much noise as possible. There we go. This inflationary pressure came in, and all of a sudden we were rallying for no real fundamental reason aside from the fact that people wanted to buy. And so that was what I wanted to take a look at and see if that, if I'm remembering correctly or if I'm crazy. But in any event, I really think that this year is going to be similar to a year that we've seen in the past, where out of the blue, we just start seeing a significant rally develop, and it's purely driven by inflationary ideas. I think that the dollar does continue to weaken. I think that some of the policies that we're dealing with and some of our competition in the global market will weigh heavy on the market. I think that trait's in some ways kind of played itself out, at least at this point. And I think when it comes down to it, the idea that we see more inflation come into the market structure, I think will have a much larger impact on things than what people are giving it credit for right now. So that's what I'm anticipating I think it'll actually show up earlier than later. I'm sitting here with my guys, really kind of looking at over the next 4 weeks. I think the corn market's going to surprise us, similar to what the hog market did. I mean, anyone that was a hog trader prior to November 7th would have told you that they needed to keep moving lower. Well, look at that chart since then.
It was unbelievable at the rally that they put on. And it's funny, on Wednesday I put out a text to all my guys. I said, to me, the top is in now. And this is my opinion. I saw what I would consider the final blow off to the top. And, not that we're not going to go higher later, but for right now, I believe that the top of the market is in the hogs. And I think that now you want to look to be on the sell side for a while. And I did a commentary for the Merc, and I said, it's time to go back to beef, because I think that the hogs have seen their move. And again, that doesn't have to be necessarily correct, but I think it looked pretty much realistic.
Yeah.
And, so we look here and we see all these things happening. And what's your take of the wheat markets? I know you and I are both very bullish the wheat. Are you still thinking over $5?
Yeah. I'm still looking for over $5 on new crop. I think we that's another one where we surprise the market. I really think, and I keep hearing folks tell me, Australia's crop was 35 million metric ton. That's an absolute record. Well, no shit. Everyone knows that. That's not new. The market trades on what it doesn't know, not what it knows. And so the fact that the Australian crop is large has already been factored into the market by most traders right now. The thing that we don't have factored into the market is what's going to happen with new crop, the Northern Hemisphere production. We've got all of the uncertainty when it comes to Russia and Ukraine. Going on with their aggression and their issues that they're having, not to mention the fact that they're similar to the Southern Plains. While they're similar to the Northern Plains in a lot of ways, more so because they've had some very cold temperatures and not a lot of snow cover. We've got the Southern Plains right now that's dealing with record warmth and a lot of their wheat's coming out of dormancy. The worst thing that you can have happen to a wheat crop is for it to come out of basically winter hibernation in February, because the reality is you're going to get some sort of frost between now and the end of April that'll really nip that crop. In my neck of the woods, most guys are telling me that they planted their wheat into pretty sucky conditions, and it looks like it looks like you would expect in doing so. So there's a lot of talk of the lowest acreage since 1909. Well, that's what's been planted. That's not even taking into consideration abandonment. You couple that with the fact that China is sitting on 44% of the world's stocks. And right now, the question is whether or not their quality is usable. And it's interesting, if they're sitting on 44% of the world's stocks, they're still not looking to do away with their subsidizing their growers' production on wheat. And you would think if they were truly sitting on that much, they would be, trying to discourage their producers from growing wheat, just like they're trying to discourage their producers from growing corn. So I think it's just as I said before, I think we've factored in all of the bearish fundamentals that we can.
Hold that thought. We'll get this after the break. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break, and we will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. To the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. And, of course, Angie, so you talked a little bit about China. And I've been doing this for 36 years, and whenever they needed something to happen, they'd always say, well, China's buying or China's doing this. But now they're sitting on 40% of the world stock because they got to take care of that hidden housing that they have, that empty, as they call them, the hidden city. So they got, now they got the hidden wheat and the hidden cities and the hidden grain. So, you know, what does that do? And I think that's one of the things that I think a lot of people miss out on, but you've got it pretty much spot on, is that the market already knows. I mean, it's not like there's any really major secrets. There is no more real great surprises that show up in markets anymore, because with computers and with every farmer and every person in the world carrying a laptop computer in their back pocket, there is no real surprises. What do you think?
No, I agree. I mean, when it comes down to it, the idea of being surprised by something appearing in the market structure is pretty limited. I mean, I think it's there. I think the potential is there that, the surprises that come down are, like you said, the hidden cities, the hidden this, the hidden that, you know, just these things that kind of catch us off guard. And I think that's where we're at right now is the idea is there that everyone's on the side of the boat that the market has to trade lower, that they're, you know, oh, well, we have this many stocks. And the last time, if I hear one more time that the last time we had carryout this high, you know, the corn market was $2. Well, okay, but we didn't have the global market that we have. We didn't have the ethanol usage that we have. We didn't have all of these things that we currently have right now that are your bullish surprises. And I'm not saying that because I expect the corn market to rally to 5 or 550. I just think that when it comes down to it, we have some significant underlying support in this market structure, and any sort of bullish surprise that does appear, which it, at this point is kind of the only thing that's left in the gamut, could really kind of make us force us to move higher, especially if you factor in some of that inflationary upside pressure we could see to the market structure.
Now, you're a hedger, you're a defender, you help farmers and producers take care of their stuff. Now, how aggressively are you hedging right now?
For corn, we're not overly aggressive. Right now, most of my guys have between 5 and 10% of their expected new crop production locked in around these levels. Now, we have target orders in place to get them to where, you know, as the market gives them another 10 to 15 cent increase in price on corn, they maybe do another 10%. I've been pushing guys to try to be about 40% hedged between here and 445 futures on the December, with the intent that we'll roll, capture some carry, capture basis improvement, and you know, basically that should translate into a cash average sale price of around 425 or so, which is approximately 75 cents higher than what they're probably looking at for a cash average sale price this year. If they listen and if they actively work to hedge. Soybean-wise, we are already 40% hedged. So we're much more aggressive on soybeans. I have some guys that are 70% hedged for new crop just because they know they can make money. They know that harvest time, they'll cover all of their input costs and be farming at a profit no matter what happens. But most of my guys, I'd say, are 40, 50% hedged at these levels. And then on wheat, we're selling stuff that guys didn't sell that they shipped last year, you know, 450 futures. Still isn't the greatest price in the world, but a lot of these guys have basis contracts or storage contracts or something like that. We're pricing those bushels, but we haven't done a thing with new crop, and I don't intend to until we get around $5.
Now, you know, it's interesting, you know, that, you know, when you're hedging, and you know, why wouldn't you hedge 100%, let's say, and then if you want it to be, in other words, if you could lock in profits right now and hedge at 100 or at 80, whatever number it is. I mean, obviously, we don't ever hedge really at 100 because you don't know that you're going to be able to deliver everything you're hedging. You don't want to get trapped in the short side of it, right? But
yeah.
But sometimes, you know, if you're hedged and you know that, you know, now I've got my in-ground stuff is profitable, okay? I just got to get through the whole year and boom, boom, boom. But then now I'm bullish. So instead of staying unhedged, we could actually just go out and kind of play a little bit in the market. That would be, I would think, more acceptable from my point of view, to be protected on what you own. And then, you know, if you want to play a little bit, then you can actually go play in the market a little bit. But other than that, you know, to me, it seems like it's easier to be in and not have to worry about what you own. And then if you want to play a little bit, you can play a little bit. What are your thoughts on something like that?
We do have customers that do that. I have some that have outside hedge accounts that they, you know, they're covered. I have other customers that we have some puts in place. You know, and it's been a conversation that we've had that I and several industry folks have had in the past, where it is one of those things where farming is one of the only businesses where basically you go out and put all of the expenses into the product you're going to produce without any intention on knowing what you're going to sell it for. You know, you wouldn't see someone go out and basically do all of their investment into their line of new widgets, new and improved widgets that they're going to introduce to the market without having Walmart interested in buying them. But the farmer does. But, you know, as I said, there are a few of them out there that do price or do cover themselves. And a lot will consider the crop insurance as their safety net. And so that's important to point out is that, you know, 85% of their production will have a quote unquote revenue net to it if they buy revenue insurance at, you know, a value set this month. They'll be able to set December pricing and November pricing on their revenue protection plan. So they are guaranteed a certain amount of income per acre, which in my theory is almost like a government sponsored, you know, government subsidized put, so to speak, on that side. Because if the price drops too far and their yield stays within a normal realm, they will see some money kicked back to them via indemnity. You know, unfortunately, most guys discover that just doesn't work. It's really not the tool they think it is. But in a lot of ways, they'll assume that they've got these puts in place or something like that. It just depends on the guy, honestly, or on the farmer themselves on what they're doing. But in theory, it would make perfect sense to go out and have your put coverage in place or have your sales in place with some upside protection via calls or something like that. But, you know, that's kind of a utopian vision as to how marketing will work in the next 10 years.
Now, the farming business, you and I have talked about this before, but obviously it's kind of like a dying business right now. You know, not many young people are getting into it. Do you see that changing anytime soon?
No, not unless we see a significant rally in price. But you and I both know a significant rally in price, you know, unless we see several years of low production doesn't mean much of anything. We did see a greater amount of young farmers getting involved as when the market was much higher. You know, when I first started trading in 2005, you didn't have many sons on the farm. You had the farmer, and then his son would be there occasionally on the weekends or something like that because he'd be working out. He'd be doing a job in town. Well, then as the market rallied through 2012 into 2013, you saw a lot of younger people coming into the farm and kind of stepping in to take things over. Now, with the current market structure as it is, you know, it's kind of reverting back to the way it was before. Young people want to come back to the farm. The problem is most families can't afford to support two or three families without some outside income coming in.
Okay, so it's more of a fact that they just can't make enough money anymore. Now, Is that because the expenses have become so high? Is that because they maybe spend a little too much on the latest and newest and greatest equipment all the time? Or what's your view there?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just like with anything else. The younger generation wants to have nice things, and understandably so. You know, the farm wife doesn't want to live in the young, you know, 20 something farm wife doesn't want to live in the old rickety farmhouse that leaks and during rainstorms and things like that. I mean, you just drive around out here in Iowa, and some of the houses that you see are just amazing. You know, you don't have those old, the painting with the husband and wife standing with the pitchfork in front of the American Gothic. You know what I mean? You don't have that old American Gothic style farmhouse. You have farmers living in subdivisions and things like that. So the cost of living has gone up substantially because I think everyone wants to kind of keep up with the Joneses, you know, and unfortunately with prices where they're at, you can't afford to offer, you know, a $50,000 to $100,000 a year net income for living expenses to three or four members of the family. So I think that's part of it. I think, you know, not only have farming expenses increased, I think living expenses have increased, you know, health insurance costs and just your general ability to function has gone up enough to where it's quite difficult to have everyone be able to rely on the farm without the wife. You know, a lot of farmers will joke that, you know, they're able to afford to farm if their wife has a real good job in town. So there's always that joke. But yeah, it's the old envisioned, you know, thought of the farmer living on the farm and his wife staying at home with the kids and them having enough money to do all of the things that they want to do is a lot more difficult at this point in time than it has been you know, over the last decade.
Well, no, and I can see that. I mean, of course, we've gotten to a society, and this is one of the things that, you know, most don't understand what you and I'll talk about when we come back from the break. But you know, the money printing, the Federal Reserve, and the way that costs have actually gone up. Even though they say there's no inflation, is all they're doing is figuring out ways to tax us more on what we already own, and we don't make enough money to overcome those taxes. But we'll be back with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, vice president of grains at Citizen Elevator. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, as well as The Sporting Edge on the weekends, and also my brand new podcast, which is available at bubbatrading.com. 30 minutes of me bitching. What could be better than that? This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop out here for a break, and we will be right back after the break with more of The Bubba Show and more from the goddess herself, Angie Setzer. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizen Elevator and our farming expert. So, what's your take on all this inflation? I mean, you know, you have, you know, we're still, farmers are still getting basically the same price for their grains, but yet everything else has gone up. And I don't care what the Fed says that we need inflation. I mean, you know, your fuel costs are a lot higher. Everything that you have to do to get prepared are higher than they were. So what kind of inflation are they looking for, and how is that affecting the American farmer?
Well, that's what I wonder, what kind of inflation they're looking for. I joked yesterday that, you know, everyone's talking about CPI and this, that, and the other thing, encouraging or indicating that we have the inflation involved. And, you know, I would argue that, yeah, we do have inflation. Our food costs haven't really come back down, whether you want to say they have or not, from 2012, 2013. I mean, you're very rarely do you see your retail costs get lower. So we haven't seen that. Our retail costs aren't down all that much. Our health insurance costs have quadrupled in the last 5 years. For many, you know, your costs of just general living have gone up significantly, not to mention, you know, some input costs have backed off from recent highs. The farmers will tell you that, you know, the from 2012 to 13, we're now quite a bit lower input wise. But just the cost of living is still substantially higher than what it's been. And if you, you know, convert back to a dollar value, you know, where the dollar's at versus where crop prices are at and where the cost of living is at, I would venture that most farmers are getting the least amount of money for their crops that they, you know, perhaps ever have. But at the same time, you know, you've got some globalization factors in that. You know, the expansion of crop development in places other than the U.S. has been huge and will continue to be huge. You know, so it's just it's an uphill battle for the U.S. farmer, and unfortunately one that, you know, I don't see an easy way out or an easy change or transition, really, when it comes down to it, other than guys learning how to improve their hedging via the option strategies or other things that the market offers them when it comes to a trading side of things.
Well, and I think that is something that's an extremely important, which you're exactly what you're bringing up. And I think that is an area that, you know, we have to, you know, continue to, you know, kind of watch over. And, you know, it's a much more challenging world because the business itself has become so much more sophisticated. You know, going back to what I talked about with, you know, everybody having a computer in their pocket right now. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, let's face it. I mean, again, surprises don't happen anymore. I mean, that's why, you know, everybody says, well, what do you think about the report? I said, what do I care about the report? It doesn't mean anything. All I need to know is where is the money and where is it flowing in? Because at the end of the day, that's what's going to dictate what I'm going to do. And, you know, we've seen these massive deals with, like, banks, and of course, they've forced a lot of people out. So if we look at the livestock markets, what are you thinking here in livestock? I'll tell you what I think, and you can either confirm or deny, but I think that that cattle, I think they're all going to go lower for a little bit here now. I think that they peaked, and I would look for some pretty good selling in cattle, both fats and feeders, and I think hogs are going to get really hit pretty hard here for a little bit. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. I think that the shine's going to wear off a little bit. You know, there is some talk about what's going on in show lists or in lists, sell lists and things like that when it comes to cattle out there, but from an overall standpoint, I think, like I said, I think the money flow is going to change direction. I think you're probably going to see money that flew, you know, went into the protein market start to work its way perhaps into row crops now. You know, it's funny to see the hog market rally and be led by bellies of all things. You know, the talk of us running out of bacon has kind of made that a fun trade for a while, but I think, you know, if you look at the charts, it appears to be in a quite a heavy consolidation sort of pattern. And, you know, I'm not saying it has to go down forever, but I do think you are going to see the proteins back off a little bit and some of that money flow probably re-enter, in my opinion, back into the grain side.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think that, you know, you have, you know, different types. You've got farmers. And you've got, you know, obviously producers, but you've also got speculators who are playing the markets. And, you know, their speculators are looking for value. And, you know, so if we look at something, you know, we go, well, you know, these are a little bit pricey now. I mean, there's really no reason for them to be that much more pricey than we would probably expect to see, you know, some selling and some buying. I think that was part of the deal in wheat. I think wheat was just considered to be so overly depressed that it was silly not to buy it. I mean, the spread between wheat and corn had gotten so narrow, which, again, is not typical, and those things happen all the time. Do you use that kind of information when you're making your trades and stuff like that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You've got to – money flow is one of the most important things that you've really got to pay attention to when it comes down to it. And so, yeah, those are the things, the speculators and, you know, when it comes – it just – to me, it's one of the things, the most important things I watch, the feel of the market. You know, I just, you've got to pay attention to the feel of the market. And to me right now, it just appears as though the market does not feel like it wants to move lower. You know, when it comes down to it, it's tried, you know, and it goes right back to the same thing. We've already factored in all the negative information that we can. So from a speculative standpoint at this point, If you know that the bulk of the information going forward here, at least over the next 2 to 3 months, when it comes to grain prices, is likely to be higher or likely to be supportive to higher prices, you know, I don't think it's a bad idea to bet on these, you know, on these lower levels that you're seeing at this point. Whereas when it comes to your protein, your hogs, your cattle, things like that, we've already pretty much factored in the bulk of the bullish information that we've seen, at least recently. I mean, I'm not going to say that every single bullish thing's been factored in, but the opposite's been true. I mean, we factored in all of the bearish stuff here a few months ago, last summer, and then we saw the bull run take place. Well, now, you know, what kind of bullish surprise are you going to get? Because we've been encouraging larger production out of we've been encouraging larger hog production. We've been encouraging poultry expansion. We, you know, all of these things out there via higher prices. And so, you know, to me, I think you start to discover, okay, we've got more supply. Demand seems to remain really strong, though. But if we see that, you know, take a hiccup or take a step back, then things could really kind of shift and you'll see money kind of flow out of that.
And I just think that the average farmer producer, they get too involved and too caught up in what they see on the news. And by the time it hits the news, it's already like, you know, I say, well, I'm like the 1 millionth person who heard that information. Right. I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just like the conversation yesterday. I had several customers call me about the Mexico discussion because all of a sudden it hit CNN on Monday, and then, you know, another AgriMoney or someone like that started to put out another report about it. And so everyone was jumping on. Well, I question the timing of it, considering the fact that the conversation with Mexico and all of the main concerns to hit the market and the, you know, the pissing match that took place, so to speak, was 3 weeks ago. You know, you could watch it play out on Twitter. If you follow the right people, you saw that the Mexican president, you know, Trump tweeted, well, maybe we shouldn't have this meeting. And the Mexican president's like, okay. You know, so the meeting was canceled and there was talk of the border adjustment tax and this, that, and the other thing. That was 3 weeks ago. Well, all of a sudden it hit the news cycle here on Monday, and every farmer thinks he needs to be concerned. And you know, in my opinion, it's old news. I think it reflected a lot more of the fact that the market had rallied 20 cents since it's taken place than anything. You know, I question the timing.
I could not agree with you. Listen, I talk about that all the time. This has been Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice president of grains at Sisters Elder. Angie, as always, great to have you on.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you. I always enjoy coming on.
Well, we get to talk. You get to fire away. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download this show as well as all the rest of them. That'll do it for today. Everybody have a great weekend. We appreciate you being here. And we'll be back with more on another day with our friend Angie Setzer. But in the meantime, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Everybody have a great weekend. We appreciate you. We'll see you on Monday. Good night, everybody. See you later.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.